lot of blood.
Dear listeners, this podcast is created by the Linguistov team.
If you want to practice and improve your English in a fun and creative way, please visit our website www.lingvistov.ru.
And if you want to share your opinion and ideas regarding our discussions, you can email us at info@lingvistov.ru.
Good.
Tell me. So right now you have two dogs.
Yeah, a big one and a small one.
So how is it living with two dogs?
Well, it's a baby dog. He's the size of a palm. She's really small.
Mm-hmm.
And she's really scared of Lola. So I hold her in my hands mostly. So she's very small.
Mm-hmm.
She's a baby. It's okay. Lola was a bit jealous, I think.
Okay.
But she seems to be okay, I guess.
Okay.
How are you? How are you feeling?
I'm I'm still ill, and but it's all right. It's getting better. Drinking a lot of fluids and trying to walk a lot, but I can't really do anything.
Get as much sleep as possible.
Yeah, that's what I do. You know, old people always talk about their illnesses. Why do they talk about this?
Well, it's part of their life. They want to talk about something that is a part of their everyday life. That's talk about it. I don't know. Or maybe they want to boast. Like,
as the worst case.
Yeah. Who has more?
Oh, something fell off yesterday.
Yeah. I wonder what those people who are healthy, what they feel, whether they feel deprived, like they have nothing to talk about.
Probably, yeah. Maybe they make up some stories.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe,
because
yeah.
That's why it shouldn't be like all of old people, you know, suffer from those diseases. I think that like half of them just make up the stories to have something to boast about.
Just imagine you are like 70 and you have a friend who is your age,
mm-hmm.
and you have get-togethers now and then, and your friend always tells you how bad she feels, like severe headaches and heartaches and backaches, and you just feel okay. So, and you get tired of her complaining all the time, and then you, at some point you just start inventing your own stories. It reminds me the Fight Club, actually. When they attended all these therapy groups.
Oh, yeah.
Marla and what's his name?
Oh, I forgot.
So the main character. Yeah. And it reminds me of my mother, because every time I visit my parents and I go out and I come home and she's not sleeping and she keeps on telling me that I'm at fault.
Mm.
She isn't sleeping is me. Because I'm not at home at a certain time,
yeah.
So and I'm telling her that that's all her imagination. She never sleeps until it's 3 a.m. in the morning.
But I guess it's common with old people. They rarely sleep. They sleep very little.
I don't know. My dad has no problems with his sleep because he's an early bird. He goes to bed very early at, I don't know, 9, 10.
Mm-hmm.
And he wakes up very early at 5 or 6. And he never has problems with falling asleep. He falls asleep instantly because he wakes up so early. So I think it's a matter of your habit rather than age, you know. So I don't know.
Did you hear this theory that when you talk, for example, with a person who has an accent or who comes from a different country, or who has some kind of, I don't know, a speech impediment, you start talking like this person,
Like, well, I always do.
Interesting. They say that it's because you sympathize with people. It's part of, you know, your psyche.
Every time I visit my parents, I involuntarily, unconsciously start speaking with this Tatar accent. I mean, the point is I don't speak the Tatar language, mm-hmm. and I don't really have friends who speak it, but I think it's not even a matter of knowing the language, it's a matter of this region, and I start having this Tatar accent.
Synesthesia, if I'm not mistaken, is a condition in which one sense, for example hearing, is simultaneously perceived as if by one or more additional senses, such as sight, for example. Another form of synesthesia joins objects such as letters, shapes, numbers, or people's names with a sensory perception, such as smell, color, or flavor. The word synesthesia comes from two Greek words, syn, together, and aesthesis, perception. Therefore, synesthesia literally means joint perception. Synesthesia can involve any of the senses. The most common form, colored letters and numbers, occurs when someone always sees a certain color in response to a certain letter of the alphabet or number. For example, a synesthete, a person with synesthesia, oh goodness, it's a horrible word, might see the word, for example, plain, as mint green, or the number 4 as dark brown. There are also synesthetes who hear sounds in response to smell, who smell in response of to touch, and who feel something in response to sight. Can you imagine it? Just about any combination of the senses is possible. There are some people who possess synesthesia involving 3 or even more senses, but this is extremely rare. Synesthetic perceptions are specific to each person. Different people with synesthesia almost always disagree on their perceptions. In other words, if one synesthete thinks that the letter Q is colored blue, another synesthete might see Q as orange. Some scientists believe that synesthesia results from cross-wiring in the brain. They hypothesize that in synesthetes, neurons and synapses that are supposed to be contained within one sensory system cross to another sensory system.
Even when I was a child, I remember we had this game with my friends, like when we would just ask each other about the letters, like what color is letter A?
Mm-hmm.
And you would say it's red.
Mm-hmm.
Or what color is letter B? And you would say it's blue, something like that. So, and everyone had his own associations with colors. So I would say it's a matter of imagination rather than...
Well, you see, it's...
condition.
I think when you are a person without this condition, it's a matter of imagination. But these synesthetes, yeah?
Well, who invented this horrible word?
It comes from Greek.
I'm not even going to try...
But they can be different. For example, I like this when you can hear sounds in response to smell. So you smell something and you hear a sound.
So how does bread sound?
I don't know. It may sound like an opera.
Well, just because I said bread.
Yeah, you imagine the smell, or you can hear the smell. For example, you cut a piece of loaf, and you hear the smell, and you hear a sound in your head.
Okay.
But I guess
how long does it last?
I don't know. I haven't read anything about the people, you know, their own.
That would be interesting.
That would be interesting. Yeah.
So they cut a piece of bread.
Yeah.
They don't have to listen to the MP3 players.
No. Maybe they hear the melody. Yeah. Like Lana Del Rey. I cut a piece of loaf and I hear music by Lana Del Rey. That would be fantastic.
All day long.
Yeah, so. And I just cut pieces. I think I would work in some
Even
kind
the,
of...
the songs that she hasn't written yet.
Then I would start working somewhere in Chilny Chleb, somewhere in a bread factory, and just cutting loaves.
The people who have this condition... I think there's always some music in their head because...
there are always smells, yeah.
There are always smells. The smell of a dog, the smell of bread, the smell of cars pass by. Everything has smell. So you are never in peace. Because in real life you can turn the music off, but in your head, if it's connected with smells, you can't turn it off. I think it can be very tiring.
There was a guy with this synesthesia, and he drew a map of London subway, and he named every station with a certain smell of some food, or I don't know, dog poo, for example, or whatever. So there was, for every station, there was a certain smell. So he perceived each station in London subway, and it's quite a big subway, so he had to travel a lot. And so he perceived each station to be a certain smell.
I think all of these conditions, or at least a very considerable number of them, are not even worth. It's just at some point somebody was able to put into the words what he feels, and then they invented a word for
they found two or three people who have this
similar experience. And they just overgeneralized it and they gave it a name. But there are thousands and thousands of other feelings which haven't been described yet, or maybe which haven't been described in words.
Well, you see, psychology is such a relative science, and every time they edit this book, because I think there were like five. Now we have the fifth edition. I don't remember how it's called. So it's Encyclopedia of Psychological Diseases and Conditions, if I'm not mistaken, something like that. And now we have a fifth edition, and it grows bigger and bigger. So in the beginning, there were like less than 100 of these diseases, then like 200, now like
and
there are
even
thousands.
Even such I would say proven conditions as depression, for example. Define depression. What is depression?
Yeah, it can be just a regular sadness.
It can. I think it is just a regular sadness. The difference, I don't understand the difference between depression, deep depression, and regular sadness. Except the fact that the person who is being depressed probably likes it.
That's true, yeah. But again, they can have like suicidal inclinations. For example, if
that's already psychiatrical, I think, problem, not psychological.
It can be dangerous. It's not just sadness.
It's understandable, but a couple of years ago, I found a website with some articles about that. So there is the so-called healthy depression. If something horrible happens, the person becomes depressed. But after a certain time, this sadness, this depression slowly disappears, and he or she comes back into the real life. But for some people, it never happens. They prefer to stay in this depression. They nurture it.
They actually, I've listened just recently a TED talk, the talk on TED website about depression. They say that it's a healthy response of our body to a certain situation. And when you become either angry or sad, and it's just like, you have an immunity. You're in your body, for example, you have an illness and your body starts to attack, for example, a virus. So depression is the same thing about, like, you have a certain bad situation. And your psyche reacts to this, so it's a healthy response. So you have to, it has its positive sides.
Well, of course it does, as long as it's limited in time. But for some people, it never ends, and they even don't have any reason to fall into this depression. They just become depressed out of nothing else to do.
Anyway. Yeah, I guess it requires certain strength of character.
To be always depressed?
No, to overcome this depression.
Oh, well, yeah, of course, but to be always depressed also requires some certain strength of character. because it's difficult not to smile when everybody's smiling.
No, I guess it's just, you know, seeking for attention.
Yeah. But anyway, I was just saying that psychology is so unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
You never know what they are going to discover tomorrow. Maybe you will become a very curious case of a certain condition.
I guess it's just because there is no clear explanation of normal, because all people are not normal. Everyone is different. And
well, you have to define normal.
Yeah, so it's hard to define normal. It's hard to define a psychologically healthy person. Everyone has some, you know, some. We're not normal, and that's why I guess every.
Maybe it's wrong to call these peculiarities diseases. Then
mm-hmm.
Maybe we should call them peculiarities or
yeah.
features.
Like features. Have you found anything, like any psychological conditions in yourself?
Well, that's what I've been thinking of when we were talking about it. For example, I have this habit of when I fall asleep,
mm-hmm.
when I try to fall asleep, sometimes I close my eyes and I try to see something in the darkness
mm-hmm.
of my eyes being closed. And if I concentrate and if I succeed, I can see the stars and
mm.
they just fall. Or not only the stars, sometimes they are just very little pieces of a puzzle. And if you concentrate, you can see something like, for example, people, a big crowd of people, or maybe a lot of houses, something like that. So it depends. And how do you call this condition? Nobody ever, well, at least I'm not aware of anybody talking about it. So then I have told you about this thing, and then maybe somebody else can see the stars and the crowds of people, and then this condition would be named. It's just fun. You have to concentrate really hard for like 5-6 minutes. I'll teach you.
I'm a strange person. I guess it's hard to distinguish between one weird thing and another, starting with my obsession with the diet.
When you think about your dieting experience, what's your personal attitude to that? Is it okay for you to be different, or do you think it's a bit
I think I enjoy it.
You enjoy it?
I do. I enjoy it a lot, being different.
Well, yeah, I can say, yeah, you talk a lot about that.
Yeah, I know. Recently understood, I think, in childhood, that when I am scared, I become aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know,
so it's some kind of an animal instinct.
Yeah, actually.
Do you easily get scared?
I don't think so.
So it means you don't easily get aggressive?
No. Like, for example, you know my friend Lena, Crazy Lena, and she told me already that when we were children, that if I am scared, it is better not to approach me, because I can actually punch and hit a person and injure him very badly.
And do you get aggressive only when you are scared?
I don't think so, but it's the main reason, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Oh, actually, did you know that our beloved North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, had a baby?
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah.
I'm not a very big fan, I'll be honest with you. Korean leaders. I know that you like him, so congratulations.
I guess. No, I think that my liking already sort of diminished. He doesn't have a beard.
Oh, okay.
He still refuses to answer my emails, so I think that...
How many emails have you sent?
About like 100 already.
Oh.
Yeah, but still, no response, I guess. No. I guess that's okay. Hmm. I'm moving on, I'm already over him, so it's okay.
You'll be fine.
I think so,
it's
yeah.
It's a matter of time.
I think that there are a lot of other dictators that I can find a liking to. Right now I like Zimbabwe leader, Robert Mugabe.
Where do you find them? Is there like
a website?
Can I find one?
Where they, where they hang out. Actually, he's quite
interesting. Is there like a social network for them?
Yeah, but you have to be a member.
You have one mutual friend.
Robert Mugabe.
Right.
Is it Montana or Montana, right?
What are you?
The state.
Montana. Mm-hmm.
A Montana woman was charged on Monday with killing her husband after 8 days of marriage by pushing him off a cliff at Glacier National Park. National Park. <We're> Dude, what?
He deserved it.
During an argument and after expressing doubts about the marriage. At first, when her husband was reported missing, she lied, telling the officers that her husband had texted her that evening to say he was going for a drive with friends. Then she reported to emergency dispatchers of this park that she had found her husband's body below a steep hiking path. This woman later admitted to authorities that she had lied about her husband's death and that she had shoved him off a cliff during an argument while hiking. So this woman stated that she could have just walked away, but due to anger, she pushed Johnson, her husband, with both hands in the back, and as a result, he fell face first off a cliff. So 8 days after the marriage, 8 days of a marriage.
Well, I guess that's not surprising, because maybe they just got married. She found out something about him, or his affair, him having an affair with somebody, or you know, things that she hadn't known before. She got mad. She became aggressive.
Yeah, became aggressive.
Or maybe she was scared of.
Yeah, maybe.
So she became aggressive. There are at least two people with this condition.
Yeah,
so.
I guess it's already a start.
So the consequence is a dead husband.
So that something similar doesn't happen in my life. I have to first
you have to control yourself.
I have to control myself. I have to stay away from the mountains.
Yeah, if you go hiking, make sure that there can't be anything that can provoke you, your aggression. I think it can be beneficial.
For whom?
For you.
Oh, okay.
You get scared, and you get the superpower you.
It's yeah, I agree.
I hadn't even known that you possess, and then you can do things that would save your life or would help you overcome certain things.
It's true. Yeah.
So it can be beneficial. Now you have to learn how to control it.
I'm going to be a superwoman.
So that people don't get hurt. Yeah. Innocent people shouldn't get hurt, you know.
That's a nice...
you have to practice on criminals.
Yeah, I think it's a good plot for a film.
I can give you some advice. Next time you want to go hiking, don't go hiking with your friend, because your friend can get hurt. You don't want your friend.
No, of course not.
Go hiking with your enemy or with your criminal, or not your criminal, with some criminal. With some criminal, yeah. Somebody who is who is having a bad life, who is breaking the law, breaking the system. You get scared. The criminal gets caught, gets killed.
For me to trigger those superpowers, I have to get scared, right?
You're right. Not surprising you get scared if you find out that the person you're hiking with is a criminal.
But if I know that beforehand...
Well, you don't. The point is that you don't know about you don't know the background of this... of your companion, you find out about it very suddenly, very unexpectedly, so you get scared. So that's a motive for you to get scared.
And who sends that criminal with me to that mountain? You?
Yes.
And you can send not only criminals, but also normal, just...
Yeah. So just for you to always be...
Uncertain.
Uncertain, yeah.
Yeah. We could be a great...
The thing is...
Saving the humanity.
You kill people?
Yeah.
I'm never involved. People get hurt.
That is beneficial for you, not for me.
But for the country as well, because there will be criminals. So not only criminals, of course, there will be some good people killed, mm-hmm. of course. But among them, there will be some criminals.
Mm. But how can you persuade a criminal to go to a mountain?
Well, I can tell him that you have $1 million cash somewhere hidden in the mountains.
Okay.
And you show him where it is. So he's like, okay. Or that you want, that you plan to do something in the mountains, like kidnap a daughter of a millionaire or something.
Mm-hmm.
So endless alternatives.
In the mountain, okay.
Yeah. Not necessarily, we can do it anywhere. Or you can go on a date with someone handsome and rich. So you are excited about it, and then you find out that he's a criminal. So you are in a restaurant, get scared,
mm-hmm.
get aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people get killed, a lot of blood.
Oh.
Somewhere like Tarantino thing.
Yeah.
But the criminal was killed.
Oh, you're painting a picture for me.
Yeah.
I love it.
A lot of blood.
The case of the lost sausage, part 6, the last one. Asya heard footsteps the moment she finished watering her beloved 6 plants that guarded the windowsill like 6 brave little photosynthetic soldiers. But now they were of no use to her, for footsteps meant bad news, and that meant generally bad people. And bad people brought all sorts of bad things. Lola and Asya didn't like people. That's why they had chosen the building that eliminated any chances of there being a lot of them. In fact, they assumed most of their neighbors on the floor where they lived either were bedridden jossers and hopeless hermits that ordered everything on the internet, or had died and were halfway into becoming a nice pile of compost. So rare was the occasion of hearing any movement in the hall. She had hardly enough time to duck down when the door exploded and showered the room with hundreds of splinters. The thunder of gunshots deafened. Pieces of wood were steadily chipped away from the furniture by the incoming flood of bullets. Asya scraped herself from the floor and hid behind the overturned metal table. Shards of glass fell over her as bullets hit the shelves. The bag of dog food tore apart and spewed its contents on the floor. Asya's own gun was far out of reach, so he hunched behind the table, covered her head, and waited. It took at least 10 minutes for the gunshots to stop. What followed was the sound of dog food cracking beneath the shooter's feet. "Come, kitty, kitty," the voice startled Asya. It was female, deep, and throaty, and so, "Come here, baby, I won't hurt you." The intruder continued. With every second, she was closer and closer to Asya's hiding place. Suddenly, another shot rang out. Then came the thud of a body falling on the floor. More footsteps, but already not menacing, but somehow comforting in their loudness, determination, and quantity. "Asya." "Detective Cooper," replied the girl, standing up, brushing pieces of glass off her shoulders with her hands and gazing curiously at the entire police squad that were elbowing each other in the narrow hall and entering her now utterly destroyed apartment. "Are you hurt?" "No, I'm okay, detective," she said. "But why kill? Do the rules mean nothing to you?" James Cooper looked at her sourly, as if he was unjustly accused of stealing someone's lunch from an office fridge. "She was pointing a gun at your head. She was right at you," he said. "One moment and you'd be dead meat." "Good to know you value my life so highly, detective," Asya smiled warmly and turned her attention towards the body lying on the floor. The woman's head was unnaturally twisted, her face turned to the left. Her eyes blank and a dull shade of metal, void of any glimmer of life. Fingers holding a rifle were screaming with a blood-red nail polish. fishnets, high heels, and a blonde wig that was now oddly pulled off to the right side of her head. "Say, detective, shouldn't there be a daily limit of madness?" asked Asian, having received no answer to that, went out leaving the body, the shattered plant pot, the destroyed fender, and the whole mess that was now her apartment behind. The streets turned black and white again. The light morning drizzle felt pleasant on the skin. You could sense this one was a persistent bugger and would keep on going for the next 24 or so hours. The air was rich with scents of autumn and the big city, scents characteristic of the Big Apple, pizza and urine magnified by the humidity. As he turned round the corner and soon was joined by a black shadow. "It was you who sent Cooper and the company to my apartment, wasn't it?" It was merely a statement of the fact, in no way a question. But she definitely had two other real ones that were splitting her head open at that moment, like, how did you know? And what exactly did you know? Still, the biggest one remained. Would Lola answer these questions? "They're gone." Lola ignored her. It was useless to ask her things she wouldn't want to explain, especially when she had that look in her eyes. A faint flicker that was indicative of a deep thought and self-absorption, as well as a commencing melancholy that always followed the unravelling of a mystery. "The freak in my room isn't," said Asya. "First, I thought it was a mask." "I just wanted to know one thing," interrupted Lola. "What were they doing in our world? Why kill those stupid politicians? It seems so meaningless." Asya saw all the manifestations of what she calls Lola's self-monologue. An outpouring of thoughts and speculations which weren't spoken out loud for anyone. Not even Asya, but herself. At least sometimes they helped Asya grasp what was going on in her dog's head. That much she was thankful for. "And they didn't intend to kill you," Lola continued. "Not tonight, anyway. I was on their way, hindering their mission. They had to have something to blackmail me with, or someone for that matter. I am glad Cooper was in time, otherwise you'd complicate too many things, Asya." This remark evoked a judgmental look on Asya's face and a feeling of strange inferiority. She said our universes are interwoven. People's actions here influence their actions there and vice versa. So we are in fact a sum of our many, many selves scattered all over the millions of parallel universes. "Who said that, Lo?" "But connections are twisted," Lola continued. "Sometimes what you decide to do here can make your other self want to do the exact opposite. You save a man in our universe and you kill him in the other. Even if you are a shy ornithologist here, but in another universe you are a ruthless serial killer who collects his victims' corpses. It doesn't matter, you are tied up." So this was the case with our friends, one of whom made such an unusual, but I suspect unforgettable entrance into your life, Asya. The three were brutal dictators, with beers, cigars, long robes, and the rest, you know, the complete I'm the supreme leader, obey me or I will get you killed package. "Hang on," Asya interjected, "have I misheard it, or you said three? And most disturbingly, you said were." "You heard me right," replied Lo to Asya's surprise. "The idiot couldn't do it alone, said they didn't have elevators. The moron simply didn't invent them. So she was scared of her wits. Getting to the penthouse with no stairs provided was not something she could have anticipated, evidently. Weird, isn't it? The ugliest part was the ritual. That's what they needed the organs for. Sound like savages, I know, but at least they have a teleport and they can travel to parallel universes. So it kind of compensates. Oh, don't worry, it's just Cooper who is going to tell you the body has disappeared." The phone was squalling in her pocket, calling for her attention through the voice of Aretha Franklin. She listened politely to what detective had to say and ended the call with a curt "copy that." Cooper sounded distraught. It was understandable. "Plus, the damn bonehead developed a real sausage addiction," Asya continued. "They don't have sausages there. Can you imagine it? Man, a universe without sausages." They were slowly making their way through the street that was starting... What was it? Asya.
I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was just some strange sound.
No, I don't know.
They were slowly making their way through the street that was starting to come to life. People were leaving their warm apartments that smelled like coffee and biscuits. They were out to catch a train or getting into their cars because they had jobs to do in well-defined places during well-defined periods of time. Their universe, as all others, continued its existence. Nothing disturbed its steady flow, except for a few minor changes. But they were all drops in the ocean, weren't they?
So I like the ending.
Did you like it?
I love it. I have some comments to do, but I haven't had time yet. I am still in the process of reading the whole story, but the ending is fantastic, and it's so
you haven't finished. You haven't finished reading it.
I haven't finished yet. I have only read like 2/3 of the story.
Okay, so you have to write to me.
Yeah, of course, because you know
your questions or
it's a bit complicated for me to stay concentrated to while listening.
Yeah,
but the ending is great.
And I think that I will continue writing about you and Lola because I have already certain some thoughts, some ideas.
So great! That reminds me of Scully and Mulder.
Yeah, that's what I was.
Who's going to be Scully, me or Lola, or who's going to be Mulder?
You know, there are also always like those detective stories. They have, you know, a genius, like I don't know, Sherlock Holmes or Hercule Poirot, or like,
who's a genius in Scully and Mulder?
Because genius is always weird, and the sidekick is always, you know, a rational person.
I know, but. In Scully and Mulder,
because Scully is more rational, she is a rational side of their duo.
But I wouldn't call Mulder a genius.
He's not a genius. No,
they are both geniuses in certain ways.
Yes, I agree. But you know, again, usually when they have those duos, and it's always a common line in those detective sort of stories. There is a weird person who thinks, you know,
irrationally.
Irrationally, yes. Uh-huh. And there is a person who thinks rationally. And yep. In X-Files, I guess Mulder is the one who irrationally, and Scully is a rational one. I can't say that. Of course, there is no geniuses in X-Files, but if you take like Sherlock Holmes. Is also Sherlock is irrational thinking, and he's a genius, and his sidekick. Dr. Watson is the rational side. The same with Hercule Poirot, and the same with like you know the TV series House.
Mm-hmm.
There is also genius who is the Dr. House, and his sidekick, another doctor. I don't remember his name. So I guess here I decided to continue it.
Right.
So, but again, decided to go in an unusual way and made Lola the genius one. Anyway, it was nice talking to you, and I will talk to you next week then.
Sure.
I hope that Daniel will join us next week.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, and have a good day, and get enough sleep.
Yeah, I'll join.
All right.
Bye.
Lots of books and discussions at www.lingvistov.ru.